Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. May is Brain Tumour Awareness Month. Brain tumours are the second most common cause of cancer in children in Ireland. Like a lot of childhood cancers, the symptoms can be varied and can be similar to other childhood illnesses. Always speak to your GP about any unusual signs and symptoms your child is experiencing. In this episode, I'm joined by 18-year-old Freya Fitzpatrick and her mum, Emma. Freya was first diagnosed with medulloblastoma, a brain tumour, in March 2018 when she was 12. She has gone through surgery and numerous rounds of chemo and radiotherapy, but her cancer returned in 2022. Despite all of this, Freya is doing really well. She's about to sit the Leaving Cert and is excited to go away with friends. We talk a lot about transitions with both Freya and her mum, who has lived this story alongside her. The impact of a diagnosis at 12 and missing first year, the impact of a second diagnosis at 16, when her independence should have been taking off, and the impact of transitioning out of Crumlin and children's care and being treated as an adult in the health system. With some honesty and words of wisdom along the way for other teens going through this. Freya and your mum, Emma, thank you so much for joining me on Gold Ribbon Conversations. We have had the pleasure of sharing stories of a few young adolescents on the podcast. Freya, your story is quite interesting in that, you know, you come from the perspective of being diagnosed at 12.
Yeah.
But now entering into adult care as you're now 18.
Yeah.
And as we were just chatting, about to do the Leaving Cert in a few weeks' time. So thank you so much for squeezing this in. I see behind you the study planner is on the wall.
Yeah, well, it's not really filled out, but it's there to give me motivation, I guess.
The intention is there, at least.
Yeah.
How are you doing now?
I'm all right. At the moment, I have a lot of hospital appointments coming up. Especially tomorrow. I'm still on oral chemo. I take it 1 week on, 1 week off. Luckily, it doesn't have like as many side effects as you would have like with intravenous chemo. It just makes me feel tired, which can affect me going into school, but like definitely not like I wouldn't have me feeling nauseous every day or anything like that. Other than that, I'm doing all right.
Being 18 brings also an element of change and freedom, and you know, your mom is sitting here, she might say no it doesn't.
I think the issue is when you start in the pediatric and the parents are advocating for you, and then it switches quite abruptly to suddenly, you know, the child is now the adult, and, you know, the letters are addressed, everything is addressed to Freya. And it's while Yes, we Frey is centered at the center of all the decision making and everything. It is very hard to just suddenly switch off and go, okay, well then, yes, you make the decisions and you can schedule the appointments and you can get yourself down there now and you can go into the doctors on your own and talk on your own. And we'll just wash our hands of it, because that's not the reality. And I think anybody who's gone through cancer at any age will always agree that they need to have somebody with them going in. Even if that means that Freya can just take on board what the doctors are saying to her, and I can just take mental notes or notes of appointments and stuff, and she gets all the information and I'm just taking down the logistics. But, you know, it is a hard transition, not just because you're leaving the safety of the pediatric setup, but in terms of the hospitals and everything. But yeah, it's suddenly it just switches like a light bulb that Freya now advocates absolutely everything for herself. Mm. And it's hard.
What do you think could be done to help that transition? Does it need a longer lead time? Or you said they're like a light bulb. Is it from literally the day you turn 18? That is it. You're out of the system that you've been part of for the previous 6 years and you're in the care of new individuals.
I guess in ways, yes, it is. But I think even it's earlier at 16 that you're supposed to transition. They say transition to adult care, but my oncologist wanted to keep me for a few more years than that. Yeah, like you're told about it, but like, yeah, it's for me, it was kind of a shock. I don't know, in a way, just to be receiving these letters and stuff like that. So I'm not necessarily like sure what they can do, though, which is the hard thing. Like, there's no kind of, I don't know, like, there's no like, it's almost like a transition year for hospital when you're going to hospital, like I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, kudos to our oncologist in Crumlin who definitely fought to keep her there for as long as he could, and kudos also to her new oncologist, Dr. Alkin, who heads up the AYA, the AYA, and she's done an amazing job of rolling it out into certain hospitals, but then it's not in other hospitals. And again, it takes time, and as controversial as it is, the Children's Hospital, once it's built, will hopefully be able to, you know, make that transition, you know, and ultimately at the end of the day, they are turning into adults and they have to be responsible for their own care. But it's those twilight years between 18 and 21 where, you know, they want to do their own thing, which is understandable, but at the same time, it's such a huge responsibility that I don't think the children themselves realize how much has been taken on, you know. So it's a learning curve, you know, and we're open to learning, you know, but you can see where you could easily slip through the cracks. I think that's what we're learning, is that if we don't follow things up carefully, if we don't, you know, keep an eye on appointments, and sometimes you have to jewel up on appointments. You might have one appointment, the exact same appointment in another, but you do it for the continuation of care, you know. And the adult system is just a behemoth, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's a machine, you know, and whereas certainly in St. John's in Crumlin, it's a safety net, you know. So it is very difficult.
And of course, watching our children grow older and releasing as a mother, our role in their lives is challenging for any perspective. But to have been so intensely part of not just raising your child, but in this instance, being that advocate, being that voice, being that parent by her side throughout all of the treatment, how is it to feel like, gosh, you're kind of having to?
Well, I think at the end of the day, ultimately, every decision that is made with by Freya on once she has all the information, you know. So it's like voting, you know, you make a decision over once you have all the information. But Freya was diagnosed at 12 and her treatment was so intense that, see, even if Freya was 50 and I was 90, I'd still mm-hmm. be keeping an eye on her. Like, I don't think that tie ever ends, you know. And I don't think we certainly haven't got it nailed at all. I don't think we're even close to getting close to at the moment. Her dad and I still go to every appointment yeah. with her, and you know, we still just sit in the corridors and bug each other and try and tell bad jokes. And but you know, I don't think we're quite ready to just mm-mm. let, you know, if she'd like to go in, like she did her MRIs on her own and there was lots of things she wanted to do on her, that's absolutely fine. You know, that's not the issue, but it's just being the support. And as I said, if there's relevant information being relayed, I think in any circumstances, it's always better to have somebody else there to make sure it's interpreted the right way. Did you take that down? Did you, you know, so I don't think we'll ever stop being her cheerleader. And, you know, as she gets a bit older, we're probably going to fight more about that.
But. Yeah.
But it's a condition of motherhood, I'm afraid. So that's just, we're going to be stuck with you. you mentioned, okay, so you were 12, Freya, when you were diagnosed.
Yeah.
How much do you remember understanding what was happening at the time?
It took me a while to, actually understand, I guess. Like, because when I went into hospital, into Beaumont, and was told like what it was, I don't like it fully didn't like set in up until I think then going into maybe Crumlin and seeing St. John's for the first time, I think then it set in and I was kind of like, oh, this is actually happening, this is gonna take out a chunk of my life, like may like stops kind of now, I have to do this treatment. So I think then, so maybe, I don't know when I went into Crumlin after my surgery, but I'd say then it kind of set in. I was like, oh God, this is what it really is.
Was it at a real transition point of your life as well, when you're turning 12 and
yeah.
you know, no more than the transition that you're kind of experiencing now of about to finish leaving cert, as you're turning 12, going into secondary school and entering your teens and shaking off that primary school identity and, you know, having more freedom with friends.
Yeah.
So many, you know, unfortunately, children are in that position right now.
Yeah.
What was the experience like of having to not just have your health impacted, but your natural, I suppose, want to have access to this new stage of life?
I find it very hard. Like, personally, I'm a very sporty person. And so I play soccer in GAA, and that stopped basically when I got diagnosed. I've gotten back to it, but that was a huge, at the time, that was a huge part socially for me. School, I found primary school, people in my primary school, I wasn't as good as friends as like I would have been with them, I don't think. And then going into secondary school, like I missed the first few months of secondary school, so those cliques were formed by the time I had made it in. So making friends was very hard, and wanting to be what's the word? Independent, sorry, independent, was hard, because seeing, I don't know, like people even making their own way to school or stuff like that together, and I couldn't do that. It was quite frustrating seeing people being able to go out by themselves and not feeling sick, or like having like someone to mind you. I found that quite difficult.
Yeah, it had a massive difference. It was massive. It was absolutely awful. I think sometimes that I look back at that period and I think going back into school, into a new school, and missing, I'd say nearly most of first year, almost between the ins and outs, and then trying to, you know, go back in and stamp her own identity, make her own friends, and it was a disaster. And it was an absolute disaster. And in the end, we actually moved schools at the end of fourth year, because it just didn't work, you know, and there's no, you know, there's no blame or there's no anything. It just, you know, it was just, as you said, it was that kind of, just at that pinch point of her life where she was about to, and then it stopped, and then she was suddenly being babied again and treated like a toddler. And you know, like we would always have encouraged her independence and everything, but at the end of the day, she was too sick, you know, and we were worried. But fair play to her. She went to a school disco, because these are all the things you do in first year, you know, the school discos, the underage discos. So she went with her NG tube and her gang of friends, and you know, she put herself out there, you know.
Well done.
You know, but as I said, that age is just, it's just carnage, you know, trying to figure out who you are, who you want to hang out with, who's the best person to hang out with, and everything. So as I said, we felt that by moving her to a new school in fifth year was wiping the slate clean.
And did that have a positive impact?
Oh, huge. Definitely. Yeah, I actually then, because the school I'm in now was a feeder school, my primary school was a feeder school to it. So all the people in my primary school goes to this school, and I actually reconnected with all of them. And now I'm best friends with all of them now. So it was a really good decision, actually, to move. I didn't want to at the start, because I just thought, like, I'm going to have to basically start all over again, try making new friends all over again. But it was a lot easier than I thought it would have been. And people in the school, they're so nice and really accepting. So it was, yeah, it was a really good decision.
I think it's a really important thing to talk about, because often when we talk about, you know, the illness, it's all about the treatment.
Mm.
But I think it's really important to consider all of those wider parts of life that can support you through the treatment and through the hard times, and friends, as we know, are just so important.
Yeah, sometimes I used to ask myself, would it have been easier had she been, you know, obviously nobody wants to be in this position, but I used to ask, would it be easier if she was four when she was diagnosed and she wouldn't have known anything about it? And, you know, we've done the treatment and we do all the advocating, we do all the speaking on her behalf. And, you know, they go back into school, and school kids at that age, they're a lot more accepting, you know, as I said. But, you know, she was at an age where she began to understand. And then the social roots are laid and the friends are made and the invites to the party. And then obviously it's on social media you know, so again, it's something you and I would never have experienced. Like, if you're not invited, something you just didn't know about.
Just didn't know.
Mm. You know, and but it's different now. So it was when she relapsed again in May 2022. She's still in fourth year at her old school, and then I just said, to myself, no, we are not going through this and treatment again in the same environment. And as I said, yeah, took it a little bit of convincing, but we did it. We got her moved. And despite, I'd say, the last 2 years being very difficult for her health-wise, haven't seen a happier version of Freya in my life. And that's credit to her friends and the school and the teachers and the support and the empathy that they give her. And they just treat her as one of their own, And I think if you're a child or anybody that has some kind of anything that's different, you know, to just be treated as normal, you know, that's all they need, you know. So
I'm so happy that that was the decision that you guys came to together, and that it has had that benefit, especially as you said, so it coincided at the time where there was a relapse. How long were you feeling that things were good before that relapse had
before I relapsed, I wasn't feeling sick or anything like that. I had no symptoms of ever anything. It was just routine scan that I would get every 6 months, and then we got the news. I'm not like up here, there at the that's where they found tumor. And I was shocked because I've been having these scans down for, it was almost 5 years.
So you almost get feeling like, sure, this is just another one.
Yeah. And you know, irony is, on the day Freya had her first scan when she was sick in 2018, we were so confident that it was just a box ticking exercise that we went and booked our holiday straight after the scan, you know, and we forgot about it. We forgot about the scan. And then we got the dreaded phone call. And then after, I think it was about 4 years when she had her other 6 month, we did the exact same thing. We did the scan and she was feeling great. And she, you know, she's playing loads of sport again. And she was, and we completely forgot about it. We just went on, booked the family holiday. I was in work. And then, yeah. So like we're jinxed with booking the holiday near the scan, you know. So it came as an absolute, I mean, not blindsided. We were not that naive. But I think with the type of cancer that Freya had and the subtype and the aggressiveness, we generally thought we were through the kind of really dodgy period. We had made it past a good three and a half, 4 years. We thought, we can start to breathe a bit, you know, and Freya was looking great and feeling great. And so, yeah, it just decided it was coming back, and that was it.
It's a very different age then, again, to be diagnosed at, because as I asked you earlier, when you were 12, the level of understanding, but this time you had been through it, but also you were 16, you know, you have a wider, you know, understanding of what this means.
Yeah,
to be expected to process it and also to face into it again, I imagine that demands really deep courage.
Well, I never it'll haunt me to the day I die, the day we had to tell her that it was back. And the, you know, the, I mean, it was gut-wrenching, the wailing and the crying, and you know, and it came from the soul this time. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the last time it was fear, but it was like fear, but like, okay, so they can fix it. But this time it was fear, it was frustration, it was every emotion. And it was, I think her dad and I are still traumatized by, you know, and unfortunately, it has continued to keep coming back. Yeah. And so, you know, when we get bad news, her dad and I like to tell her together. So, you know, I think anytime the two of us, her dad and I, walk into a room, I think she gets terrified.
Yeah, I do.
So it's like we'd walk in together, we're like, no, it's okay, you know. So 16, yeah, she's way more understanding, and again, she's just pieced her life back together, and now
fall apart again.
Yeah, it was hell. And this time actually we had to have our surgery in Temple Street, sorry. And we had been warned in the hospital in Crumlin that that 16 is the actual age of aging out, you know, which is horrifying. And and again, our consultant and surgeon were great at keeping her in the pediatric system, but I couldn't imagine 16. I can't get my head around 18, let alone 16. So we were in Temple Street for the next round of surgery.
Childhood Cancer Ireland doesn't receive any government funding and relies entirely on your support to continue to grow our work in order to reach and help more families impacted by childhood, adolescent and young adult cancer. This year, we take on the Croke Park Ab Sale on the 28th of September. Will you join us and show how brave you can be? Find out more about how you can make a difference at childhoodcancer.ie. To help us to continue our services, please text GOLD to 50300 and donate €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more.
How important was it for you that you could stay under the care of people that were familiar, that actually they decided that in this moment 16 was too young?
I don't think at the time I realized. I was like, oh yeah, you get, like, I just get to stay here. Like, I think almost I was thinking about it, oh, like, but just the mention of Beaumont, I'd be like, well, I have to travel all the way down to the north side. But now I kind of see it like how, like, scary it would have been to be put into an adult hospital at 16. Like, I'm used to walking down the children's hospital with, like, there's pictures of, like, animated characters and everything there, and
the goldfish bowl,
and the fish, the big fish tanks and everything like that. Like, and I think even just like the responsibility of being talked to as an adult would have been very scary. I guess now it still is, but I'm being talked to as an adult in all aspects of life now, not just hospital terms. So I think it would have been very terrifying just to be dropped into adult care at 16. So I'm very glad that they held on to me.
Yeah, and we were very lucky as well that we had a wonderful, wonderful relationship with her oncologist, Dr. Owens. And, we completely put our faith and trust in him, not just because he's the medical expert, but because he was such a lovely, or he is such a lovely, lovely man. And he was always very supportive of Aidan and I, Freya's dad and I, and looked after us. And the way he used the language was so incredibly, I don't know, just the way he spoke was just, you know, it was calming. You know, he'd be telling you the brute realities, but in a way that was very gentle, let's say. So we were dealing with all of this trauma. So the fact that we got to stay under his care while he sorted it out, and he's the main kind of conductor, because obviously we're in a multidisciplinary, because it's brain, you're in Beaumont, there's endocrine, which the late effects, then you have the chemo side, so that's moved to James. So we're running around all over the different aspects, and Dr. Owens was kind of the orchestrator of it all. And now obviously we've moved away from him, so we have to be, responsible for keeping an eye on it all ourselves, which is understandable. You know, he, you know, where this is how the adult system works. But and Dr. Alkin is overseeing, and she now has taken over that role. But I couldn't imagine anything worse than finding out that she'd relapsed and we were being moved out. And on the same day, I think that would have tipped us way, way over the edge.
You mentioned their late effects.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, again, relating to the time in your life when your treatment was happening, did it have any specific, you know, your body is changing, you're growing, you're, you know, how do you feel like the treatment has impacted you now as you enter that next stage of adulthood?
Yeah. So, well, my hair just never, it grew back a small bit, but it just never grew back.
That's from the radiation.
Yeah, that's the radiation. And then in terms, like, my hearing was affected as well. So in school, I wear hearing aids. In terms of endocrine, I haven't grown since I was probably 12. And endocrine puberty was affected, so I won't be getting my period or anything like that. And yeah, with the cognitive stuff, it's just affected the way my brain kind of just works in a way. And it's like, I guess I think it has affected how well I can learn as well, and it is really, it's affected my mental health as well. Even now, like trying to, like the brain fog kind of comes in, and I forget what kind of, not forget words, but they get a bit lost in a way. But like my mental health, it's gotten better, but just in terms of like, if I used to be terrified anytime I got a pain physically, like anywhere, I'd be afraid that it was a tumor or something like that. Even like if it wasn't in my head, I'd be terrified of something happening and relapsing. And now I think actually with going through a relapse, it's in a way made me feel less scared. In a way, I'm not sure.
The worst has happened.
The worst has happened, yeah.
I know.
So I've been less scared about it. But I think one of the main things that really treatment has affected is me playing sport. Like, I loved playing, and I was playing at a very high standard before I first was diagnosed. And after the first go round, and I recovered, I was able to get back to a certain point, which was good. And then the second relapse happened. And I guess it just, the taking the oral chemo, the buildup of the radiation, has just affected how I can gain fitness, and I get out of breath quicker, and it's very, very frustrating, because I want to keep playing, but I want to keep training and everything, but it's hard for coaches to want to play me or want to let me on to teams and stuff like that. When they see that I get tired after 10 or 15 minutes or something like that, that's been really hard, I have to say.
You've had to give up so much control.
Yeah.
the sport was a huge blow, massive. And I think, you know, the sport, because she was such a high achiever when it came to it, and she played on all these development squads, and it's all she ever wanted to do. And then when she finished her treatment, the first, as she said, the first time, we worked incredibly hard to get her back, and people donated, and then we found a fabulous guy to work with. And over 3 years where she slogged and slogged and slogged, and she did get back, you know, she got back to the high level and she crawled her way back on. And as soon as she got back on, she relapsed. And you're thinking, like, what was she in a previous life? Like, you know, that way.
Or who will she be in the next one?
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's just not fair, you know. And the late effects, you know, yeah, like the endocrine stuff and everything. And I think it's, I don't think you really understand the effects of endocrine, and, you know, and you think it's just like growing tall or, you know, going through puberty, but it's, you know, it's like the endocrine support the bone density, they support your heart health, your muscle strength and everything like that. And when they're damaged, then, you know, everything gets affected, you know, fatigue and you know, weight gain, or, you know, everything gets affected. So it's been hard, you know.
It's like, no, cancer is just unfair. But to also have it impact so much of natural, normal developmental stages, whether it be those friendships or whether it be just growing a little bit taller, you know, but realizing the identity that you assume that you are, it's a lot for you. Like, it's really incredible that you have managed to navigate it all.
Thank you.
I think that's our friends. I think if we didn't have that, we'd be in a very different place. And I think it's credit to her friends and the people that she surrounds her. You know, I think you can actually get through any situation if you have your core around you, be it family, be it whomever, you know, whoever those people are that, you know, will ride the waves with you, you know. And they stepped in without even having to be asked. And so now she's replaced her soccer with a lovely social life, and that involves going out. And
well, still play a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah. She does play, and Gaelic match tomorrow. Yeah. And but, you know, it's I kind of felt like when one door shut, another door opened, and we see an 18-year-old now that's living socially a great life and going out and having the crack and doing the 12 pubs and all the rest that 18-year-olds do. And again, when she started going out into town, initially I was terrified. I was like, oh God, what if she falls and she's thin, and what if she gets cold? But now I'm just like, go for it, you know. You have the Free Now app on your phone, and you can ring if you need a lift home or whatever. So, you know,
that's amazingly brave, Mama. I don't think I'd be there.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know what else do you do? Yeah, like, she's got so much else, and her friends are great, and they all keep an eye on each other. And it's not, they don't just keep an eye on Frey; they all watch out for each other. Yeah, and
they are brilliant.
You know, we're close to town, and we're lucky to have good bus routes and all of that stuff. So I'm just happy to see her happy, you know.
So looking forward to third level, whatever that may be or what that might look like, but yeah, another stage of meeting lots of new people and another transition maybe out of that, you know, friendship group and into something wider and bigger.
Yeah.
Have you thought about how you feel about actually relaunching this version of you now, this new 18-year-old you, into that environment?
I don't know if I've really thought about it yet. I'm a bit nervous, just for kind of what's ahead. I haven't really kind of pictured what's other than like I've only thought of up to leaving cert up to 6 year holiday.
A holiday.
I haven't really thought past
that's
that.
A rite of passage.
So I think like it depending on what happens if I do, if I go straight into university or whatever happens. I think I will be excited, but I definitely think I will be very nervous as well. So I think, yeah, I haven't really thought about it too much, but I guess maybe the next few months or even weeks I will.
Just get through the leaving cert first and then get to this holiday.
Yeah.
It's the holiday. and then we'll worry about the results and where we go after.
One step at a time.
But that transition is hard for everybody.
It really is.
I think that's an underestimated one. I think people assume that you go to college and you live your best life, but that's certainly not the case. You know, it is a struggle. It was for me personally as well, because all my friends went to one college and I didn't get to go there. I went somewhere else. And I used to get the bus from my college just to go to their college, to their sports bar, so I could drink with them. And, you know, I hated it for the first year, absolutely hated it. And, but, you know, you kind of just get on with the actual work, you know, and then you try and, you know, but it's, you know, you chop and change, you want to do this and then you change your mind, you know, so I think that's fairly normal. You know,
it is completely normal.
You know, and if you wanted to take a year off and work or whatever and go back, I know a lot of people who do that as well, just because they haven't decided what they want and they don't particularly want to waste a year in college doing something they're not interested in. So deferring and all sorts. And as we were talking about, there's so many PLC courses now, and they all act as stepping stones rather than, you know, the straightforward, straight in, there you go, 5 years, graduated, done.
And it can often lead to a much more aligned experience where you're doing something that actually you realize that you want and that you like. And often, like, you feel like this pressure to just, as you said, like just jump from leave insert into a course. But there's no value in that if it's not actually something that kind of speaks to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're very interested in sports.
Sports science or something like that. I have to finish filling out my CAL. Sports science, or I haven't really thought. I would love to do physiotherapy, but physiotherapy, the points are very high, and it's weird for some colleges. Most colleges that require you to do another language to get into physiotherapy courses. I'm not very good at languages, so I chose not to do another language. So that, I think the only one physiotherapy course that I'd be able to do would be in Limerick, which I really feel like going down to Limerick. All the Dublin-based kind of colleges that do physiotherapy, they require you to do another language, so that's already like opted me out of that. So I think sports science kind of be the way to go, I think.
But you know what, after everything you've been through, anywhere is lucky to get you. But I think
you can do apparently jam making in UCD for 200 points.
There you go.
But it's not like jam that you spread on toast. It's like jam for a door.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I know.
I didn't know that. I thought it was jam. I think here's me thinking plum chutneys.
No. Not. It's jam for doors. Okay.
Yeah, I think anything that you've, after everything that you've been through anywhere, is incredibly lucky to have you because of what you would bring to the situation, to the people that you would meet, to how they could be inspired by everything that you have met with courage, and that you don't give up. You know, that example of what you shared with me about getting fit again to be playing at that high level again, that's really not easy.
No, that was no. And I mean, that was literal blood, sweat and tears. I mean, I don't think we'd even finished the chemo and she was straight in with this great guy from Rap Minds and Andy, and she'd be getting sick on his feet. She'd be
I don't think I ever got that far. No, I
didn't. No, you did.
It.
There was a tube that got puked up. There was tears. There was lots. And he never gave up on her and she never gave up on it. And, you know, she finally got her goal, realized to get back to playing soccer at a high level, and starting from only a couple of minutes to half a match to then full matches, you know. And then it was all taken away. But she's gone back to the soccer in the Gaelic every single time, no matter how bad she feels. It doesn't come from me, by the way, because I don't do anything.
I don't think it comes from dad either.
No, I don't know where she gets it. There's obviously an uncle or aunt somewhere in our lineage that is that determined. And she's got a 16-year-old brother that, you know, he'd be really good if he applied himself the way Freya does, but he wouldn't have the initiative.
Become an actor.
There will be many teenagers listening to this, or indeed parents of teens listening to this.
Yeah.
Having gone through 6 years of this journey between being well and then being in remission and then it coming back and having to switch schools and having to navigate all of the different transitions that we spoke about, what do you feel like they should know?
I think they should know just to take it day by day, not or even hour by hour, not look or worry too far into the future, because that will just make you worry and anxious and frustrated even at other things that you know you can't control. But if you just look even day by day or hour by hour, you can look at the things that you can control. And yeah, that's what I
really understand it. But we've lived 6 years like this, and Freya has lived with cancer for 6 years, not fallen into a hole and felt sorry for herself. Now there's days where that happens too, but I mean, you know, for young people like that, you know, they're built a different breed to the older people. You know, they just go out and they just get on with it, you know. And it's not a case of getting on with it, but it's just, you know, live with the cancer and don't let it stop you, you know, and surround yourself with good people. And the parents as well, like if the school situation isn't working, look at an alternative, you know. Find them, you know, if I used, again, if one door shuts, another door is open. And a lot of the kids who may be sporty or actors or whatever, you know, you can, you know, find something else, maybe try and introduce them to another thing or whatever. And ultimately, you have to cut the curtain strings and let them figure out a lot of it on their own, and you'd watch from the shadows. That's what I say. So I let her go off, but I'm kind of keeping an eye on from afar. But you have to let them live, you know. They just have to get out there. And you know, Freya would say I wrap her up in cotton wool, but I would say I wrap her up in thin ply tissue paper. If you understand, you know.
a protective layer, but she can break free if she needs.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've gone through all the 13s, you know, her 13th birthday was spent in ICU in Crumlin. 13, 16, 18, those kind of 20, you know, 21st. We've gone through them all, either sick or in remission or whatever. And so I see it from all of it. And now that I look at her now, she's no different to my older daughter who and what she behaved at 18, going to festivals and everything. So I actually find that incredibly reassuring that, you know, sometimes the path is not linear. It's, you know, you might have to go like Spaghetti Junction route, but hopefully they get to a period in their lives where they just feel like every other peer and behave in a way that makes them happy.
Just be happy.
Just be happy. Mm. And for the parents, be happy that they're happy.
Mm-hmm. Freya and Emma, thank you so much for your time.
You're more than welcome.
Thank
you for letting me into your story, to your study planner.
Yeah, empty study planner.
I wish you every happiness. I mean that, not success. I wish you every happiness. So as you approach the Leaving Cert, don't take the stress on, just constantly seek the happiness. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.